Coming up, Deborah Potter reports on the growing movement across the country to allow doctors to assist terminally ill people who want to die. And Lucky Severson looks at faith groups using their influence as stockholders to advocate for corporate social responsibility.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome. I'm Hari Srinivasan, sitting in for Bob Abernathy. Religious groups were among those applauding President Obama's announcement this week of new measures to curb gun violence. Many faith leaders attended the White House meeting where an emotional president said his administration would enforce laws that require all gun sellers to register as dealers and complete background checks on all buyers. He said Second Amendment rights must be balanced with other rights.
Our right to worship freely and safely. That right was denied to Christians in Charleston, South Carolina. And that was denied Jews in Kansas City. And that was denied Muslims in Chapel Hill and Sikhs in Oak Creek.
Joining me now with more about the religious community's involvement in this debate is the program's managing editor, Kim Lawton. Kim, that was an interesting piece of sound that you had from the president there. He went out of his way to choose different religions and how they've been affected by gun violence.
And I think you saw this as a way of really touching with the religious community, and many have been very involved in this. Many prominent religious groups welcome this measure, these actions, as well as they've been pushing for more legislation for gun control. Mm-hmm. Many of them call it a moral issue. You have everybody from the Catholic bishops, Reformed Jews, as well as many other faith-based groups really active on this issue to varying degrees. So many have made it a priority.
Now, you spoke to some of the people that were at the White House. What did they have to say about it?
They were very touched by what had happened. Obviously, it was a very emotional event, and many of them felt that, and they felt gratified that having been in the trenches on this issue, that it was getting some traction.
Okay, and now, obviously, faith has a wide range of opinions, and not everybody was at the White House, not everybody was supportive of the president. What are some of the other religious leaders thinking about this?
Well, there is a divide, and at the institutional level, there is broad support from many religious groups. When you get to the grassroots and in the pews, there is more disagreement, and there are some who believe that it's not the best way to deal with gun violence. And some have talked about even using theological basis, saying that the scripture says you should fight evil and you need to have every weapon possible to do that. So there are people who disagree with this. But again, it's not the organized groups as much as it is people in the pews.
And has the White House made efforts over time to try to rally the religious community to their side for this debate?
Well, I think they welcome the support from the faith community, and they see, as in many issues, they see the faith community as a good partner to help push this, especially at the grassroots level. We know surveys show that Americans are divided on this issue, and so they hope that the faith community, by using moral arguments, can help them in their cause.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
In other news, Mormon leaders condemn the armed occupation of a remote federal wildlife refuge in Oregon. Occupiers said they took over the land in protest of the federal government and its land policies and administration. Calling themselves Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, leaders of the group have cited the Book of Mormon in the conflict, suggesting God blessed their actions. Mormon leaders said their scripture cannot be used to justify the armed occupation. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump released his first TV ad, which reiterated his call to temporarily ban Muslims from entering the United States. The ad also mentioned his plan to build a wall along the southern U.S. border to halt the flow of illegal immigrants. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton joined religious and political leaders in urging the Obama administration to recognize as genocide the slaughter of Christians by the terrorist organization ISIS. There has been debate within the State Department about whether the persecutions Christians face from ISIS rises to the level of genocide. Protests continue around the world over Saudi Arabia's execution of 47 anti-government activists, among them four Shiite Muslims, including a prominent Shiite cleric. The executions have fueled sectarian violence between Shiites and Sunnis across the region and have led to a breakdown in diplomatic relations between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Shiites in Saudi Arabia have long complained that as minorities, they face discrimination. Wheaton College, a prominent evangelical Christian school in Illinois, says it plans to fire a professor who, in a sign of solidarity with Muslims, wore a hijab. She also posted a comment on Facebook saying Christians and Muslims worship the same God. Larisha Hawkins is a political science professor at the college and says she is flabbergasted by the school's decision to terminate her position. School leaders say Hawkins' theological statements are inconsistent with the college's statement of faith. Meanwhile, in response to the anti-Muslim and anti-refugee sentiments that seem to be on the rise, the U.S. Department of Education is urging the nation's schools to take steps to guard against harassment and discrimination. In an open letter to school leaders, the department said schools should be on the lookout for bullying, especially against students of color and those who appear to be Muslim or Arab. Faith leaders are calling on President Obama and the Department of Homeland Security to put an immediate halt to the raids on Central American families that have led to the arrest of more than 100 individuals. Federal immigration enforcement agents began arresting immigrants in Georgia, Texas, North Carolina, and other states. Officials said the arrests were made against migrants who had lost their asylum cases and were ordered to be deported by immigration judges. Religious leaders say families should not be separated by deportations. The movement to allow terminally ill people the right to die with help was one of the fastest growing in the country in 2015. So-called death with dignity bills were introduced in nearly half the states, and one became law in California. Correspondent Deborah Potter spoke with advocates on both sides of the debate.
For Kelly Lang, it's another day of treatment at a clinic near Baltimore for the disease she's been fighting for 13 years.
I have metastatic or stage 4 breast cancer, which is a terminal illness. If I don't die of something else first, this disease will kill me.
Cancer is Lang's biggest battle, but not her only one. She's also lobbying for a new law in Maryland that would allow doctors to prescribe lethal medications to people like her who are terminally ill so they can end their lives on their own terms.
I've seen some people have a very peaceful end where they are comfortable, and I've seen some people experience a lot of bloating, which can be mildly uncomfortable. But what worries me is I've seen some people in excruciating, uncontrollable pain. I really feel like if I had the option to avoid a week or 3 weeks of excruciating pain, it would be such a comfort to me as I progress in this disease, knowing that I had a little bit of control over something that is otherwise uncontrollable.
Maryland is one of 23 states where so-called death with dignity bills were introduced in 2015. Supporters believe they're gaining momentum now that California has become the fifth and largest state to allow physicians to aid in dying. The proposed laws would mirror what's been legal in Oregon for almost 20 years. More than 1,300 people there have used the law to get a prescription to end their lives. Two-thirds of them have taken it. One was Cody Curtis, featured in the award-winning documentary How to Die in Oregon. She was of sound mind, had terminal liver cancer, and 6 months or less to live. In 2009, she took a lethal dose of a sedative and died at home, surrounded by her family. Many doctors are not ready to see what they call physician-assisted suicide legalized in more states.
I think that is a huge problem for patients and for doctors if we introduce into the relationship that we no longer will focus on curing their illness, we will no longer focus on managing their symptoms, we will no longer focus merely on palliation of pain and other problems near the end of life. But we will also, in an almost bait and switch, say, well, if this stuff doesn't work, we're gonna make sure you die.
Public opinion on the issue is shifting. And philosophy professor Sam Kirstein says it may have to do with baby boomers watching their aging parents die and facing their own mortality.
I think that people in this generation have had a lot of control over their lives. They've had a lot of choices that they were able to make, living in relatively good financial circumstances, for example. And that maybe they want choices to have at the end. They want to control how they go out.
More than two-thirds of Americans say doctors should be legally allowed to assist the terminally ill to end their own lives, according to a recent Gallup poll. That's up sharply from just 2 years ago, when about half of Americans approved. Why the change? One woman's story may be partly responsible.
Brittany Menard was 29 when she learned she had terminal brain cancer. She moved to Oregon so she could get a prescription to end her own life. And she became an advocate for the Death with Dignity movement, with videos on YouTube getting millions of views.
I chose this for myself. I would never sit here and tell anyone else that they should choose it for them. But my question is, who thinks they can sit there and tell me that I don't deserve this choice?
If a patient wants to commit suicide, that is not illegal in any of the 50 states. So the legislation isn't needed for that. What the legislation does is include physicians in that patient's suicide and gives legal protections not to the patients, but to the physicians.
Almost all religious groups oppose aid in dying. The Catholic Church is particularly outspoken.
The Church's viewpoint on assisted suicide and euthanasia is that it's never permissible to take a life, an innocent life, for the sake of alleviating suffering, that essentially you're killing a person to remove suffering from their lives.
Father Thomas Petrie is academic dean of the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. He fears that new laws will let doctors pressure patients to end their lives.
My bigger fear is that it's going to become very easy for patients themselves to feel morally pressured to do this, to see themselves in those last stages of life as useless, as a burden to their family, as a burden to their loved ones, as a burden to the world. When, as a man of faith, I have to say, on the contrary, it's the sick who show us what it means to suffer well, to suffer beautifully, and who give us the opportunity to care for them as we would care for a suffering Jesus Christ.
One of the few religious faiths to officially support aid in dying is the Unitarian Universalist Church, where Alexa Fraser is a seminarian. For her, the issue is personal.
My dad was a total character, very, very independent, and as part of his independence, he knew how he wanted to die, or at least he knew how he didn't want the last of his days to go.
Alex Fraser had Parkinson's disease. At the age of 90, he tried to kill himself twice before succeeding with a gun. His daughter and her husband found him.
It was horrible. Nobody should have to go through that, least of all the person who's dying.
Fraser is now an outspoken advocate for the Death with Dignity bill in Maryland.
My personal theology is really very simple. It's about kindness. Surely we can be kind to one another. I see nothing kind about somebody being at the end of their life, not getting the choice that they want to make, and in pain and suffering. Don't tell me it's about doctors and pain and palliative care solving every problem. It doesn't.
Both sides in the debate say what they want is death with dignity, but they don't mean the same thing.
There's a sense in which people are said to lose dignity near the end, when they can't take care of themselves, they can't dress themselves, feed themselves, and so forth. Now, on the other side, people also appeal to dignity, but they appeal to a different notion of dignity. For example, a notion that persons have a special worth no matter what happens in their bodies, no matter what control they lose. And on this idea, we might be disrespecting the dignity of persons in helping them die sooner than they otherwise would.
There's not much dignified about cancer. And things often get very messy in every sense of the word at the end. perhaps this option would bring me some dignity. But I think for me, it's mostly being able to say, I've had enough. This is it. I've had enough. I'm ready.
1, 2, 3, deep breath.
Would Kelly Lang be ready to actually take a toxic dose of medication to end her life? She says she's not sure. And for the time being, asking a doctor to write her a lethal prescription remains against the law in Maryland. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Deborah Potter in Baltimore, Maryland.
The Death with Dignity measure failed to gain traction in the Maryland legislature, but supporters there plan to offer a revised bill this year. Next week on this program, a story on patients who don't express their end-of-life wishes and the aggressive treatments they receive in hospitals that their doctors wouldn't want for themselves. Faith groups have been using their influence as stockholders to press major corporations to exercise social responsibility on a variety of issues, including the sale of weapons. Many believe they have a moral responsibility to work for change, but others say such efforts go too far beyond the group's religious mission. Lucky Severson reports.
Walmart is big. The retailer has over 11,000 stores in 28 countries with revenue of nearly $500 billion and more employees in Rhode Island has citizens. Walmart is also one of the country's biggest gun dealers. So there was jubilation in some circles when in the fall of 2015, the company stopped selling high-capacity assault rifles. Evan Davis is a chancellor of Trinity Church in New York.
It's a double win because it helps the community. It helps the company. And from our point of view, that's what this topic, corporate social responsibility, is all about.
On the other side, people like Michael Hammond, legislative counsel for the Gun Owners of America, thinks churches like Trinity ought to stick to preaching the gospel.
I think it needs to determine whether it's going to serve God or mammon.
You referred to it as a temple of political liberalism.
Yes, I did.
Hammond is sore at Trinity because the church was deeply involved in trying to influence Walmart's policy on selling high-capacity rifles. It's just one example of faith groups investing in corporations and working to influence corporate decisions. The Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, or ICCR, was one of the first to encourage socially responsible investing.
We want all of you to engage in conversation around the table.
ICCR is a coalition of 300 faith and values-based organizations, ranging from evangelical Christian to Muslim. David Schilling is a United Methodist minister.
We're looking at it from the perspective of a broader sort of moral framed in terms of the social economic justice issues. And that's not necessarily easy for companies initially to absorb.
ICCR has been at work behind the scenes for over 40 years, involved back then in persuading American corporations to pull out of South Africa during white supremacist rule.
The South African Council of Churches, they're saying to ICCR, listen, you need to really address this issue. It's hurting us. It's killing us. We want companies to withdraw.
ICCR has waged an inside battle for reform with major U.S. corporations. Those, for instance, who do business with apparel companies, like the ones in Bangladesh that lost more than 1,100 workers in a collapsing sweatshop building that was a death trap. ICCR is currently working to rein in companies that are engaged in what it calls modern slavery, the trafficking Chile estimates of at least 21 million people.
The core here is if companies that ICCR members are invested in have global supply chains, agriculture, electronics, you know, apparel, construction, it just goes on. You're likely to have trafficked workers at the base of that supply chain.
The center works with companies it wants to behave with greater social responsibility. The financial meltdown of 2008 took its toll on public trust of the country's banks. This is Father Seamus Finn. He chairs ICCR's board.
It's always a question of whether Congress or the banking sector has a better rating in the mind of the American public. But restoring confidence in these institutions, because it was so absolutely just devastated, is going to take a while.
The Senator's approach seems to be working, even though members rarely hold press conferences or attack corporations publicly. They do their work from within. They are, after all, active shareholders. Kathy Rowan with ICCR works with the healthcare industry.
We come from the perspective of being long-term shareholders, which when we say that often to companies, they're quite relieved because there is so much pressure for that next quarter and hitting those earning marks.
I think our argument has been quite simple, that the more a company is able to integrate a good, solid social and environmental policy and government policy into their model of business, then they will be around a lot longer.
Reverend Bill Lupfer is the rector of Trinity Church.
I'm a governance guy, and I think good governance builds trust, and so trust within Walmart, trust within Walmart and their customers. If we're an investor, we want that kind of trust.
We wouldn't be investing in Walmart if we didn't think it was a good investment, a company with both a great present and a great future.
Trinity has been invested in Walmart for many years, and after the Sandy Hook school shootings, the church decided it had to do something.
These are weapons that fire so many rounds so quickly, bang, 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 that you can kill a lot of people before anyone has a chance to overcome the shooter while they're reloading. We think there that the danger to the community outweighs the sporting interest, the hunting interest.
Walmart refused to budge, so Trinity sued in court and won, then lost on appeal. But the Securities and Exchange Commission then ruled that Trinity, as a shareholder, has a right to present social justice issues, and the company's board should consider them. Walmart stopped selling so-called assault rifles.
Walmart, when they did that, said it was because customer demand for these guns was down. And I hope that's the case, because if that's the case, that's a very good sign for the country. But if customer demand came back for some reason, Walmart could still do something different because they didn't base their decision on principles of ethics.
Michael Hammond says the reason Episcopal churches like Trinity have been losing members is because of their social activism.
My point is that there are churches that are doing very well in America that are meeting in auditoriums, and by and large, the commonality in those churches is they talk about, more specifically than Trinity does, about God, rather than about the most recent liberal cause.
If you read the Gospels, you see that Jesus was constantly being accused of talking about temporal issues rather than spiritual issues, and he made no distinction between spiritual and temporal. In fact, we say that a good preacher prepares sermons with the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other, and that we need to be engaged in the language of our culture outside our church doors.
Hammond warns that Trinity's victory could spell trouble for corporations, even countries.
The effort to get Walmart to stop selling certain types of firearms was part of a larger phenomenon in which, for instance, universities are considering using their very small shareholdership in very large corporations to get the corporations to divest from Israel or that sort of thing.
These investors for corporate responsibility seem undeterred, if anything, more determined. Reverend Schilling says it takes a lot of tenacity to turn a corporation around.
You have to have some audacity, and you have to have some hope, and you have to have some faith.
While Walmart declined to comment for this report, the company does have a history of responding to pressure over what it sells. It stopped stocking handguns 20 years ago. And after 2015's deadly church shootings in Charleston, South Carolina, it removed items displaying the Confederate flag from its stores. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson reporting.
Finally, on our calendar, while some Christian traditions celebrated the Nativity this past week on January 6th and this Sunday, many other traditions celebrate the Feast of the Epiphany, which marks the manifestation or revelation of Jesus. For Western churches, the holiday tends to focus on the visit of the Magi or wise men to the baby Jesus. But in Eastern Orthodox churches, Epiphany, or Theophany as it is also called, focuses on Jesus' baptism. That's our program for now. I'm Hari Srinivasan. You can follow Religion and Ethics News Weekly on Twitter and Facebook and watch anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on the website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you, more scenes from Christmas and Epiphany around the world.
Грех ради наших человеколюбчим духом, ныне и присно, и во веки веков.
Благодаря Твоему,
вы ваша,
память же бе Христос.
Премудрость прости.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
PBS.